This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
We're looking for a plan because the plan that you're talking about is wait till 2026. Is that it? 27?
Well, I'm asking for a fence of patience because we're in the first year of that transition, and I think we got to keep on building on this group.
Run it back? Is that what is going to happen?
Yeah, that was sort of a, hey guys, buckle up for nothing.
That's right. Get ready for a horrible continuation of whatever is going on.
That's the goal. A shrinking timeline is basically to have a faster turnaround. But I think there's a lot to like about this young roster.
I got to tell you, it's a sad story, isn't it? I mean, I feel worse now than I did when we came in.
I did too, Mully.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Good morning. All good here.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Ruthie Polinsky in again this morning. Thank you, Ruthie, for getting up. Your bright-eyed and bushy-tailed got here very early.
As always.
And I got to tell you, I feel even worse after hearing what AK said. It was like yesterday we dealt with the horror, and then we talked it through, and I felt like KC told us exactly what was going to be said. So when I got in the car and we were leaving, I listened to AK the whole way home, and he said exactly what we, it's almost like KC had seen the script, and you got like, wow.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't know what else I was expecting, but I walked out of here feeling a little dissatisfied by the state of things. And then after hearing him, you just kind of, it's just an extraordinary thing to have like no real path toward, you know, well, we'll wait another year. The idea being that, you know, the passage of time can really help people. It can make people better. It didn't really.
It was exactly what Casey and Cody Westerlund told us yesterday that was going to happen. And they told us, everyone, stay patient. I mean, they essentially told us, I wouldn't expect much this offseason. And then AK essentially said, I wouldn't expect much this offseason. We got to wait till 2026, and we want the guys to take a step, and we'll be better next year. And it's like, will you? Like, what makes you think that?
There's a lot of audio. Today is like audio day on The Score. There were people speaking all day long. Like essential people, like people that will be here on the sporting landscape for a long time. You heard a lot from all the coaches up at Hallis Hall. That was really fun to hear some of that stuff. You heard not just from AK, but from some of the Bulls players. We will go through that. Connor Bedard said something interesting yesterday, which was good. Apparently, not miserable, not feeling as bad as the season looked, and sometimes he looked as bad as I felt when people were criticizing him. It was good to hear him kind of. It's words, but it at least it is a semi bright little lining, if you will, on the clouds hanging over the Blackhawks. So I think all in all, there's a lot of conversation that happened yesterday and a lot of people expressing some things that we'll have to be going over all day.
I'm like you, Molly. I left here and I was just feeling a little gross after we talked about the Bulls all day. And, you know, it was therapeutic to at least have each other talk through it together.
Yeah.
But then when listening to AK, I was like you, listening in my car after we walked out of here. And I just sort of felt sad again for everyone. And then I headed up to Hallis Hall. I got to talk to a lot of the Bears assistants, which I know we'll get into today. Yeah. That was therapeutic because you felt like you went from no hope to hope.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking about the Bulls, sad. Went up to Bears, all rainbows and sunshine up there.
Yeah.
I mean, it is good vibes in Hallis Hall, offseason champs.
Mm-hmm.
Then came back down here to the United Center, did our show on Chicago Sports Network, and went to sleep, woke up ready to be sad and happy and all the things again with you today.
God bless you. It's turning into a therapy session in Chicago. We called ourselves the city of losers, and then we realized, hey, you know, we're not the losers. They're the losers. We're all big winners. And I don't know that that was convincing, but I felt better by the end of the day when I was kind of looking through a lot of the different things that people had said during the day.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Vooch was really good. I don't know why that stood out to me. I don't hear enough from him. And to have a man at his age kind of stare into the abyss of his career and contemplate how if this team could be good enough for him to want to be a part of it. You know, he wants to chase a title, as everyone does, as they age out of their particular sport. We see it all the time. It's extraordinary oftentimes to speak to veteran players because, you know, when you first start playing, you are at your best as an athlete. And as you mature and your mind understands the game more, your body starts to break down. And there's this beautiful kind of prime, still relatively young, where you know the game well enough and your body is strong enough to do all the things you want. But when you get to Vooch's age, you kind of are left, you know, with the sad reality of what didn't happen, what you thought was going to happen, and what you watched other people do. And maybe that is kind of what you're hoping for one last kind of, you know, Indian summer, if you will.
Yeah, your body starts to make you face reality of, okay, I'm running out of time here.
Yep.
Even if my mentally, emotionally, I feel like I have a lot of time, you sort of, as these athletes progress in their careers, say, wait, I got to win now or I might not ever win. And you sort of felt for Vooch. I mean, you sit there and you say,
poignant.
As much as the fan base is in this purgatory, like Vooch is in this purgatory more than anyone else. I mean, and you feel for him. You obviously someone that I think has just been the consummate professional and such a great Bull. And you want him to experience that, whether it doesn't feel like it's going to be here.
Yeah, it was just an interesting day because, again, a lot of people at the beginning of their careers that you heard from, and a lot of people kind of, you know, I love new coaches coming into a place, seeing guys for the first time and their impressions of it. That you have to hold back quite a bit because you know at some point, I mean, if you went out for a cocktail with one of these guys, they'd be like, oh boy, you know, we saw, but they're kind of. They strike that tone of, you know, well, I work for him and boy, mm-hmm. he's good and we're going to be great. And you have this kind of, the Bears thing was uplifting somehow.
It was a cool setting yesterday too. They had the coordinators at the podium, including Antoine Randle-El. And then we went down to the basement of the PNC Center and they had basically tables set up where the guys were just sitting there. All the assistants, you know, position coaches were all just sitting around and you could just kind of go up and stick your microphone in his face and just sort of have this informal sort of casual conversation, which is always the best setting with those guys. And it's very candid. It was very cool to sort of interact with them. It's first time, you know, the media had a chance to really talk to any of them. So a lot to get to today when it comes to it's a very eclectic, diverse, very fun staff. I mean, it's from young coaches to old coaches to former players to people who have won a lot in their careers. I mean, it's going to be a fascinating sort of accumulation of these different parts and to see what this staff can get out of these players.
And we're going to talk to Dave Wannstedt a little later in the program. And it's so much fun when you see people come in and you're trying to measure them and get an impression of them, and it's not long. It's probably a year or two where everyone's doing impersonation of the guy. You know what I mean? Like everybody kind of Everyone develops like an understanding of the quirks of a personality, especially with the head coach, but with other guys too. It's a good thing. It's a nice process. That sadly, I've been through too many times, but they've been through a lot of different coaches.
Yeah,
it's good. I will look forward to those moments where eventually, at some point, you roll your eyes over something that somebody mm-hmm. says because you've heard it too many times. And that's kind of the way the players will be too. Uh-huh. This is the uncertainty of what is about to happen. You don't know when you are a young player and you're coming into a situation. You just don't know. You mm-hmm. don't know how it's going to impact you. You don't know. It's amazing to me when you think about sports and the teams you've been on and the different things that happen around it. You know, Mark Trestman was a goofy cat and, you know, a bright mind but kind of a whacked out guy. But all that stuff about you're going to be that guy's, you're going to stand up in his way, that is all true stuff. You become linked to people by playing with them and by being on the same team and by spending some years together. So that's always fun stuff to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, it's.
And it's also funny to think about like a guy like Vooch. Like, who do you talk to? Who is he going to, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like he can. Hey, Matas, let's go out and have like a night. You know what? They're just such a age gap there.
Yeah.
It's funny. But I love coaches. I can hear from
I love coaches. There. There's so much knowledge and there's so much that happens behind closed doors that we as even media who are covering these people don't ever get to know. And it's just you always try and break down those walls and sometimes you get a little peek behind the curtain and can lead you to other things. But it's the beginning of a wonderful maze that we will try to solve.
Yes. Yeah, every person has like a public side, a private side, and almost like a secret side. And you'll never get to that side. But every once in a while, you'll come across someone where you kind of end up developing a closer relationship with them. And you get a kick out of it. It's fun. It's a good thing. It's always fun to hear coaches. And I'm always fascinated by the explanation when things go awry. About, you know, well, you know, what we did was, and what we thought was, you know, we did this and that and the other. Like, it's just you're treading water and you're trying to explain how you're. I thought one of the wildest moments with AK was when he was asked about job security. And that's not even an issue, man. That's not even like, oh, well, we're all on the same page. I love what Billy's doing. Like, it was crazy to think about how that's just not a topic of conversation at all.
Yeah, and I think when you're an executive and you're a coach, there's an element of like, I am aware that this is a results-driven profession. And if I don't show results, like, I'm not going to survive. And it just felt like there was a sort of misdirect there. Like that wasn't even, he was like, yeah, there was no acknowledgement of, I understand this is painful and this isn't good enough. That I think was what was so frustrating and disappointing about yesterday with the Bulls. Right. It's like, there was no acknowledgement of like, I know that I'm letting people down and I'm not doing a good enough job because we lost in the play-in again. So it's like, he just said, yeah, we're good. All set. Everyone's all set on the plan.
Yeah, I think that's what he was trying to. Well, we need you to be patient because we're in transition and this is how it happens. And, you know, look at all the guys that are gone and this is us trying to build it up again. And we're not going to be able to do that really for another year. I mean, and it's just shocking to hear that. And you can say, players improve, guys get better. But, you know, the main problem with the overall talent and the overarching issue with the league in the five-man game and one guy can dominate, there's no path to get better. Mm-mm. And they haven't, you know, they would need something extraordinary to happen. They would need, whether it's the ping pong balls to bounce in a way that no one saw coming and then wind up with a guy. When Michael Jordan was here and they were winning titles like crazy, that was really they got lucky and got Michael Jordan. That was nothing to do with anybody. It's much, everyone's a part of it and everyone's got to build, everyone's got to do their job. But they had like one extraordinary player. You know, they got another good player to build around him, a couple of other good players, but they also, you know, you had one guy that, mm-hmm. I mean, what is the lesson to, well, get the best player in the game, get a generational talent, and then let him lead you to the championship? That's the lesson. You know, get lucky. Mm. It's time for them to get lucky. It's been going on for far too long. They should be closer.
Yeah.
When you're putting a team together over this length of time, and I get it, it's the rebuild has already begun, but the first iteration did not work. It didn't work in any fashion. And in fact, it kind of kept you from getting better.
100%. And that's sort of, it felt like there were a couple questions that were peppering AK yesterday on, this is the formula. Like, yes. People know this is the proven formula. Why are you guys resisting that?
That's right.
And it just felt a little tone deaf to say, yeah, we are trying to expedite this process and do it our way, even though all the data and all the history and the history of the league shows that this is the way to do it. We're going to just try something new and put everyone through misery.
It's pretty wild. It's just what's incredible is you're also talking about a league where, you know, you go through people pretty quickly. Like most organizations, a lot of ownership. You know, you saw was it Matt Ishbia that is the primary owner in Sacramento, and he responded yesterday to what Stephen A. Smith called him the worst owner in the league. And let's take a listen.
I'm sure you, over the last couple of days, probably saw a National Reporter make some, you know, ridiculous statements about you might be being the worst team owner or worst owner in professional sports history. Just kind of wondering what your response is, if you have one.
Yeah, so Stephen A. Smith, you know, I don't take much he says seriously, you know. I don't think many people do, to be honest with you. You know, things he said about Kevin Durant, just wrong and disrespectful. The things he said about LeBron James were just disrespectful and inappropriate. And so with that being said, I don't really think Stephen A. believes that, what he said. I think, you know, he's doing his thing. He's on the mic and he's doing what he's... And I think he'll apologize to me because I think it's disrespectful to put my name and aligned with anybody that was kicked out of the league or no longer part. Like, yeah, if he wants to say for the first 2.5 years management bought the team, we didn't win a championship, I think you'd probably say about almost every owner ever. But yeah, we had high expectations and we didn't win. We spent a lot of money and we didn't win. Yep. Yeah, be critical of me on that. But to even say that kind of stuff, like I said, that's just, I think, like I said, he'll apologize. I think he was out of line. And I think he knows that. I don't think he really believes that.
It's actually a pretty solid answer because Donald Sterling was kicked out of the NBA. Like, he holds the crown. And just because the Ishbias have spent a lot of money and it's failed,
right,
doesn't mean – I mean, they did try. They did put three really good players together. It was a flawed plan. Clearly, they had the wrong people, and they've been firing coaches like crazy. I think it's 3 years running that they have fired the head coach, and that's not really a path to success. And some good coaches, by the way.
Yeah.
But I think that I don't know. I don't think I'd mind having him and or his brother. He and his brother are kind of investing together, trying that same strategy. You know, let's bring in the best players. Oh, it failed. Didn't the Cubs, when they first got here, kind of have to take a second to figure it out and then win a World Series, and now they're doing the rebuild? But they did get that World Series, and they did try and fail with spending a lot of money on some players that weren't good. I mean, now you can argue maybe they're not, throwing the cash around like they once did, but I don't know that you don't feel significantly happier that they came in here and took over and won a title. I mean, who doesn't love that happened? And then you look at what's going on now with the White Sox, where you're just kind of, I don't know what you're doing. You're just kind of rolling this team out. They lost 8-0 yesterday. They pitched okay. I didn't think it was the starting pitching, but they can't hit at all.
Well, to go back to your ownership point for a second, I mean, imagine being mad about an ownership group coming in here, spending a lot of money and trying and getting some of the best guys here and it not working, and then calling him the worst owner based on what we're seeing here right now, where it's just the worst team in baseball. Yeah. Like, again, it's hard to say, like, you're the worst owner ever because you spent a lot of money and it didn't work, but you see what's, in parallel to what's going on here with the White Sox.
Because of the rule changes, they put together the worst team in baseball history, and they get to pick 10th in the draft. It's kind of like, what's the advantage of going 10th? I mean, I know they need a lot, and in fairness, they do get the first pick in every other round, but I get the feeling, so they had their terrible year and they don't get the first pick. Whatever happens this year, is Colorado worse than them? Is it possible that they don't get the first pick after 2 years of what's unfolding?
Can you imagine when those two teams get together? Like,
this is it.
This is like a mini playoff. Try and like there's
World
like
series of awful.
Yeah, World Series of awful.
Goodness gracious.
Maybe that's the game. Maybe that's the game we go to.
Oh, look at you! Look at that.
Hi.
And, who's the kid from the A's that keeps hitting home runs? That guy's like 23 or 24 years old. I'm sitting there like cracking, there goes the ball. And I'm just kind of like, why can't they bring up someone like that? Why don't they have a guy like that waiting to hit home runs? Wouldn't that be fun? Ah, whatever. We have to talk about that too, because they're getting shut out now. Is that the third one? That is not good. To not be able to score a run in a game. You know how you lose series?
And again, this is against the A's, who are not going to be, I mean, they're okay at best, right? They're not a team playing in October.
Where are they from, Dustin? Tell us again.
They are not from anywhere. They are formerly of Oakland. They are futurely, if that's a word, probably not, of Las Vegas. And right now they're the only team listed in the standings with just their nickname. Everybody else has a city in front of it. They only, if you look at the standings, they are listed as the Athletics. Everybody else is the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah.
So they don't have a home.
Can I call them the Sacramento A's just as a form of insult?
I think you should ask Marshall about that.
Okay.
He's like kind of Mr. Sacramento.
Oh, he likes
right?
Sacramento. Yeah.
Cowtown, right?
No, like kind of.
Sacramento's like a cow town.
No, it is the capital of the state.
Thank you. I knew that.
And it is the capital of like homelessness in America.
I had no idea.
I don't want to be cruel about it, but
that's not why I called it cow town.
No, I that's why I was trying to correct you. There's actually
it's a big farming community out there.
Yeah, but there's also like they have like the capital bill. It's like you ever go to Madison? So obviously the university is there, and those are all the main buildings. But there's like a nice stretch where have like.
It's a great farmer's market up there.
Yeah.
On the Capitol.
I love a farmer's market.
Like the Unabomber was sending bombs out of Sacramento, even though he didn't live there, because there was such a heavy homeless presence in that community. And I talked to Marshall about it. It was crazy. Like, you go there, and in, like, you know, there's beautiful grounds, you know, grass everywhere, and people just will live in the center of that, right, where the lawmakers kind of step over them. They'll clear it out, and then people will make their way back. It's just, it's like a, I mean, I'm not picking on anyone. I think if you were homeless, you'd love to be homeless in Hawaii, because it's like super nice and warm there, as opposed to the poor people that are sleeping down where we drive in the morning. You know, it's just it's an awful reality. But the weather is pleasant. It's California, and there's a lot of people just living, and they, you know, they're thrown out and then they're brought back. And I'm not being cruel about that. No, I'm saying that my abiding memory of Sacramento is like, good God, there are a lot of people living on the street here.
Mm, sad.
Yeah. Not that I go to Sacramento every 6 months, but just saying, that's a reality. All right, we've got better things to talk about. I don't know how.
We're trying to feel better today. Let's try and make ourselves.
I said Cowtown and you went homeless.
It's Friday.
Well, I'm sorry.
We are going to have a great day, Molly.
Thank you. Thank you. And we will solve both the Bulls issue and the homelessness problem. No, we're not.
Well, the best thing is that we have Dave Wonstead on today, which just makes everyone feel
Dave's
better.
Dave's a great guy. Ron Coomer. We got a
great good list.
We've got a bunch here. We got Mike Palm. Love that guy.
And
Brad
Biggsy.
Brad Biggs is
the happiest man alive.
He is just a ray of sunshine. All right. We've got a lot. We're going to get to the Pick Six next. It's Mully and Haw, Ruthie Polinsky, and this morning on Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of Score.
They are futurely, if that's a word, probably not.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
Hey, I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
And we would like to tell you a little bit about our podcast, Psychopedia.
It's true crime infused with comedy.
Making it a crimedy.
I do extensive investigative research and go deep into the darkest corners of the human psyche.
And I'm just here to lighten things up a little bit with humor, baby. You know, never at the expense of the victims, though, obviously.
Come join our family of little psychos over on Psychopedia. Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What stood out for you from the Bears coaches on Thursday's media session? Did you enjoy DC's Dennis Allen describing the mindset he wants his players to play with? Tough, nasty, hyper-competitive, and play with a swagger. Play with a chip on their shoulder. That's been a hallmark of the best defenses I've been around.
Yeah, I love that quote because it was so coachy. That's like, I mean, he didn't use the hits principle, but that's a very coachy thing to say, right? I mean, just a very defensive coach, tough, nasty, hyper-competitive. Come on, I love that kind of stuff. So it's fun to get a chance to just hear some of that stuff. I thought the most interesting thing he talked about was finding more ways to use Kyler Gordon. Mm-hmm. That's really kind of an interesting thing because Kyler Gordon has some traits to him, like when he goes on the blitz, man, that guy's a good athlete and he can do all sorts of different things. So that's always fun to see. The idea of playing him in different areas of the defense surprised me. And we've talked about this before. I think that the nickel, you're in nickel so much 80% of the time, it's like a starting position. It's not unusual to need a nickel for much, if not most, of the game. But that was a cool idea. I thought that there were a couple of things that were said that I liked the general sort of almost the camaraderie that you feel among the staff, because that is what you are building. And I always love hearing from ex-players about stuff. Antoine Randall L. is a really interesting guy, and obviously local guy made good. And I remember him as a high school player. So it's always fun to see guys like that and watch their career unfold. I remember when he, where'd he go, Indiana, and mm-hmm. he was two-way player. I remember talking to him at the Senior Bowl when he was out of college heading into the NFL. And I love guys like that, that are kind of lifers that have been around a long time. It's good stuff. Good to get
tough, them. Nasty, hyper-competitive, play with a swagger, play with a chip on their shoulder. You know, I think that's kind of been, the hallmark of the best defenses that I've been around.
I wanted you to hear him say it instead of me reading it, much more effective that way. I liked what I heard from Dennis Allen. I felt a little vindicated. I think when we talked about this contract for Gordon, I thought, do you try him out as the second corner? I brought that up. And I also think it's very interesting that they even talked about safety. But the thing that stood out the most, it was also from Dennis Allen. I used it in the pregame show. It's a good start.
Yeah.
When he talked about pass rushes.
We were talking about that before the show.
And was that
that's
a tipping?
Exactly right.
Is that a tipping of the hand about what maybe happens at 10? Is it a tipping of the hand of what happens a week from tonight when they get into the second round of the NFL draft?
You can never have enough of those guys.
So,
and that
stood out.
He's underlining that.
That stood out.
Yeah, I think Dennis Allen had a lot of really good things to say. Obviously, what stands out to me from Dennis Allen is someone who was a three-time head coach. He has so much experience, has seen it go very poorly. He's seen it go well. And I just really liked sort of his expertise and a lot of the different things. Hearing him talk about ways that he wants to use Kyler Gordon, again, it kind of ties into the extensions that Kyler Gordon received, TJ Edwards received. I just feels like the coaching staff and the front office is aligned and they're working, hand in hand as they prepare for the draft. And it's exciting to hear sort of the plan for the guys that have been here, the guys that are new here, and the guys that are going to be here futurely, as Dustin likes
futurely.
To say. But really, I wanted to say, because the question asks what stands out about the Bears coaches. I have so much to say about some of the guys that we got to talk to yesterday. But what really stands out to me is just sort of this group of coaches. Ben Johnson didn't just bring the Detroit Lions staff with him. Matt Eberflus brought so many people from Indianapolis with him, people that he had worked with before. There are guys from so many different organizations, so many different experiences, so many different age groups, a lot of former players. There's just a really cool mix of what these guys are good at, and it just does feel like it's gelling very well. And I'm really looking forward to seeing sort of the accountability. That was a big buzzword yesterday. Obviously, after the Bears, that was a buzzword last year because there wasn't any of it. And I'm excited to just sort of see the way that the players take to this coaching staff.
And with that, I'll take your questions.
How did you receive the key quote from Bears executive VP AK at yesterday morning's season-ending news conference? How do you believe fans received it?
Well, I'm asking for fans of patience because we're in the first year of that transition. You know, I thought that the way we finished the year shows some promise. It's hard to win games in this league and to finish 15-5. Yeah, it's not a victory lap, but I think there's some positives.
All right, I know that we're not fans. I'm the fan, but how did you react to hearing that yesterday on your drive home?
I am so glad that I was on this show yesterday and we talked to Casey Johnson and Cody Westerlin, who told us that was exactly what AK was going to say, because I was prepared for it. It didn't hurt any less, but at least I knew it was coming. I think in an ideal world, I would have loved to hear more acknowledgement of this wasn't good enough. We have to be better. That's all. That's all I wanted to hear. And there was none of that yesterday. It was, I love the way we finished the year. We developed our young players. We learned this new style of play. I'm safe. Billy's safe. We're ready to rock and roll right back here again next year and hope our players who are already here take another step. And wait till 2026, everyone. I know this year sucked, but we're going to do it again next year. So that's how I feel. It was very therapeutic. I'm just so glad that we had Casey and Cody yesterday.
By the way, futurely is now an obsolete adverb that means in the future. Just thanks to the Google machine for that. Some promise, some positives in year one of the new roster. So what he did by trading away Max LaVine and earlier DeMar DeRozan, he bought himself some more time. They all of a sudden got into, you know, the latest. This is going to stick with Mully for a while. Futurely.
I love you defended yourself by saying you used an obsolete adverb.
Well, so it existed it existed at one point. So it was a word.
Could you do it again, please?
Futurely?
No. Use obsolete adverbs for the rest of the show.
In the future, I will do so.
Imminently.
But some positives, some good things, some promise. I really am curious, what will, like, the 2025 Bulls, you know, just wait till what's around the corner. Like, what's going to be the catchphrase? You know, see red, you know, in a good way. Okay.
How did I receive what Arturis was handing out? I did not want it. I would imagine that the fans did not receive it well. It was a difficult gift to know what to do with. Here, I darned you half of a sock. Oh, let me get that on right away. It was very dissatisfying. I'm with you, Ruth. Yeah, I thought that having KC kind of explain to us exactly what was going to be said, and Cody kind of agree with what that's where they're at. This is what they got. They're going to have to run everyone back. We kind of knew that going in. I was just curious as to how he was going to try to sell it. And then he just kind of, well, we're in this transition and you know what we're doing and we're being very open about it and nobody's job's in trouble and love what Billy done and we look at these four things that we accomplished. It's just, it unfortunately, it rings hollow because of the performance against the Heat. They did have this thing that happened at the end of the year. Had they lost on a last second shot, had they been in the game in any way, had they been prepared to do anything, I think you might have received it a little bit better, because we know what the situation is. But it's very difficult to hear, did you like how exciting it was when we went 15? We're going to do it again. And, you know, who knows? What were they? They were like 8 or 9 games better than anyone thought they would be. I don't think any of us thought that they would be as good as they were a year ago, which is not, that's not the gold standard. But that they, if they could make that jump again, then they would get more interesting, or interestingly if we want to go with adverbs. I just don't believe that the whole kind of lie of the year was exposed in that playoff game, and it was hard to hear it sort of underlined as a gold star moment. That's all.
I don't know if that answered the question.
That's the voice of Billy Donovan. Are you on board with the Bulls' plan, effectively being to run it back and hope their younger players develop? AK admitted they won't have spending resources until after next season.
Well, I do believe in the way we wanted to build this roster is basically having players that have experience to kind of shrink the timeline and continuously, you know, look for other ways to improve your roster. And I truly believe, I think Billy spoke before and after every game about how important it is for this young group to, you know, to focus on winning and what goes into winning instead of just rolling the, you know, ball out and, you know, tell them to go and develop, you know. So this is very important for us, and, you know, that's the path we chose.
Are you on board with the Bulls' plan?
Yeah, I'm understanding of what he is saying there, which is that they feel, even if the rest of the league is trying to tank, they feel that the competitive edge, whatever way you want to word it, is something that can shrink their timeline. They can get better faster by playing in bigger games, by trying to play to win. And I think that it is, you know, you're kind of zigging when everyone's zagging. You know, it's not a conventional idea. There's an element of it that appeals to me just because I have a hard time with tanks. I living through last year's White Sox, this year's White Sox, it is a difficult thing to, like, get everyone to just lose faith in any idea you might have. But the problem is, in the NBA, the only way to get better is to kind of draft yourself out of it. And there's so much information and so many people doing this. It is rare. And AK was part of doing it, where you find a guy like the Joker, who turns out to be this phenomenal player and eventually wins a title, and you find him in the second round of a draft. It's not something that you can do. That is the exception that kind of proves the rule. It's not something that really you can follow. You can find a player here or there. I think, as someone that doesn't like tanking, I wanna believe that it will shrink the timeline, but I don't. I think they need to tank, and I think they need to make moves, and I think they need to try something else. And it just doesn't work in the NBA to not have great players. It's the only way to win in the NBA is to find something, you know, very unusual. And, you know, Steph Curry was not the first overall pick. You know, you need to get lucky on something like that, and that's not the way to do it.
I don't know that I'm on board with it, but I don't know that we have a choice whether or not to be on board, because they don't have the flexibility. But I think we found the slogan for next year in the answer. Shrink the timeline. It's condensed.
That's a great T-shirt.
I think that's the T-shirt. Shrink the timeline.
Call the fine timeline. Folks there at Wrigley Field.
We are the radio home of the Chicago Bulls, and I think the shirt should be shrink the timeline.
It's a great, great slogan.
I'm not on board with the plan, and I'm with you, Molly. I don't like the idea of tanking. I think it's a really hard thing to ask coaches and athletes to do. It doesn't build culture. It's not in Billy Donovan's nature to tank and to tell your players, we don't want to win this game in so many ways. And I don't think that's fair to players, because Billy's talked about it a ton with you guys and other in the media in general about the value of teaching young players how to win games. Like, you have to learn how to win games, and you can't do that when you tank. Am I on board with the plan? No. Do I really see a better way? Not really. That's kind of the problem, is there's not really a way out of this, I guess, unless you trade and blow the whole thing up, which isn't really going to make sense at this point. So I guess, you know, you wonder if Vooch is going to be here next year. Could they find a trade partner for him? Maybe acquire some. I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and tell you what you can get for Vooch right now, but I don't know. There's no plan. I don't like their plan, but I'm not paid to make a plan. So, right. I'm just going to sit here and cry.
Way to handle it.
I'm sorry, I have a question for you.
It's the only way.
Of all the comments from the Bulls players on Thursday, did the Vooch make the most sense as he talked about his future?
It's hard to really, know what the plan is, what's ahead, what they're thinking of doing, but it's definitely something I'm going to talk to them about. Obviously, I'm at a stage in my career where I'm trying to win now and, play in playoffs and, deep playoff runs and things like that. So we'll see.
Did Vooch sound like a guy who wants to be around or who will be around in the future when they shrink the timeline?
Yeah, speak of the devil, I think I really appreciated the candor from him there. And, after I just sent him out the door, I think it's worth noting that this is someone that has been an absolute joy and pleasure to cover, who is a great Bull, who represents the organization with class, and he does everything the right way. With that being said, do the man a favor, because I don't know if he's going to win here. It's going to take a little bit. And if he wants to go on, quote unquote, I quote him, deep playoff runs, it's going to take some time. It's not happening in 2026. That's what AK just told us, 2025, 2026. So I hope for the best for him, because he deserves it.
I agree. He deserves it. I hope for the best for him. But I think we've seen him play his last game in a Bulls uniform. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I don't think he fits where they're at right now. And I don't know that he has a lot of I don't think he has very much. Would they give up 2 first-round picks for him? They're not going to get 2 seconds. It's just not. There's no real value.
You could say they lost that trade, right?
Well, if you wanted to, I'd have to take a look at what Wendell Carter Jr. is doing. Look at everything. But I think I almost, after hearing him and knowing how professional he's been about everything, I almost think they should do the guy a favor and ship him to someplace where he can help. I think that they do a lot of kind of discussion of trading players, but they probably value their own guys at a much higher rate than the rest of the league does. I think this is a situation where you could throw the guy a bone and try to land him somewhere where you're going to win, and he could knock down a 3-pointer in the course. I don't think he's a featured player. I think he is with the Bulls, but I'm not sure if he is around a contender, but he would definitely be a guy that would be a good bench player for a contender, and I would try to make that happen for him, mm-hmm. just because he's been a good soldier.
That's another really good question.
What did you make of Edgar Cuero's debut in a 4-hit, 8-0 shutout in yesterday's finale of a series sweep at the hands of the Athletics, whose future lies in Las Vegas? Is it time for the White Sox to bring up 26-year-old Tim Elko? He's hitting .373, 3 home runs, 11 RBIs down in Charlotte, even if Andrew Vaughn has been incredibly unlucky. He's not delivering.
That's what the claim is, that he's just been really unlucky. He's hitting the ball. It's just going to people. I got to tell you, I'm not a huge Vaughn-y guy, and there's a reason for that. He's been a disappointment. I'm not a huge Tim Elko guy. I don't believe that he's this kind of ticking time bomb that could come up and save their team or anything. But they can't break wind, let alone break the shutout. For the love of God, they were just pathetic. It's just so awful to watch, and their offense is awful. I am really impressed with Edgar Cuero, and I'm not playing. I thought that he hit the ball hard twice. He hit it really hard He had a long shot that was caught, and then he had a line drive up the middle that the pitcher caught with the back of his glove, one of those plays, and the guy, he looked kind of stunned by it, and he got hit by a pitch, so he got on base. But I thought what really impressed me was how good his English was. This is a guy that understood as a catcher, in order to work with pitching, you need to be able to communicate with the pitchers. And he has done an extraordinary amount of work to learn English so that he can talk to the pitchers that he's going to be managing. He just turned 22, like earlier this month. This is a really young guy who's doing all the right things. And I was stunned at how articulate he was and how he has immersed himself into the language, because he feels that this is an important part of his job, managing pitchers. I think that's phenomenal. And I think that's going to be the hardest part for him, is, you know, trying to come up with a game plan, trying to help guys, trying to work with pitchers as a catcher. But he apparently has improved at that. And the guy, I'm telling you, he's going to be able to hit. But they've got two young guys they brought up that might be able to hit a little bit. Nobody else on the team can. So try Elko. You know, you got to give up on the Vaughn thing. It's not working. And that guy would need to go. He'd need to be perfect for seven games just to get to like his weight as a batter. And he's having an awful year, and it's unfortunate, but they got to do something. Need runs.
Going Vaughn.
David loves we just, you know, little homage to David Haw, who's enjoying his last day of vacation. Perhaps the White Sox could borrow what I've determined to be the new tagline for the Bulls: shrink the timeline.
That's all we got.
That's all we're going to get from him.
Okay, it's not a bad plan. Do you think Tim Elko would shrink the timeline?
He might get a hit. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, what do you got to lose?
He's got some slug,
they can't
maybe,
score.
Right? He's
yeah,
got some slug.
They have no slug. They got, you know, hey.
Andrew Benintendi came
Luis,
off the,
Luis
right?
Robert, yeah, you need back. Him back. But,
he's got to come back.
Your 5'8 slugger is what, you know, oh, yeah, let's get Hack Wilson back. You know, reanimate him, for God's sake.
The Edgar Cuero story is really cool. It's a cool one. Like you said, just turned 22 years old. I love what you just said about the English and the relationship between him and the pitchers and all that. It's great. And like you said, I was actually impressed. He's got a lot of maturity. He feels ready for the moment. Like, he deserves to be in the big leagues, at least on that team. I think, like you said, with Andrew Vaughn, it's like you got to do something to, even if it just creates some competition, if it's something to just light a fire, because it's not working. You have nothing to lose. Give the young guys an opportunity and let's go.
Did you see the video of him when he got his call up? Oh. You know, they go into the manager's office. I got to tell you, like, it's not,
I love those.
It's not for radio, but the visual of that was unbelievable. Yeah. It was great. Really good.
I've answered this question, you know, a lot, obviously.
Do you feel any sense of relief to hear young Blackhawks star Connor Bedard state his undying love for the Blackhawks and his new adopted city?
I've said it 100 times, and yeah, I love it here. And, you know, I'm a pretty mild-mannered guy, and, you know, if I look a little sad on the bench or something, maybe people can take it out of context. But, you know, I think anything can, you know, get said to me. I mean, I don't really look at that. I don't really see a whole lot of that unless someone shows me. But I just think, you know, I think people that know me know that I love to be here.
Are you relieved that Connor Bedard wants to be here in Chicago?
I love hearing from him yesterday. It's a good note to go out on, as there's probably going to be a, you know, transitional offseason for the Blackhawks. Can we shrink their timeline, Dustin?
Hire the coach.
I mean, let's go. But, you know, I think for Connor Bedard, it was a really tough year. He received a lot of national criticism, felt like people were picking on him. David Haw was ready to throw fisticuffs at people who weren't defending, getting up and defending Connor Bedard. I think, do you guys want to know what an emotional wreck I was when I was 19 years old? Like think about where you were when you were a teenager.
God. Yeah.
Like this young man has gone through so much and has so much pressure on his shoulder. He's 19, right? I think he's 19. 19, 20?
Yeah.
He's getting...
No, he's still a teenager.
Yeah. This is someone that has the weight of the entire city on his shoulders. And it's just, he's been put in two pretty challenging situations. I think he's handled it as best as someone his age could. And he's going to grow and mature. He talked about getting faster this offseason. He wants to be able to keep up, and he's got things to work on this offseason. He's going to be better. I love hearing that he loves it here because, you know, it was a tough year.
The back page of the Sun-Times today, Molly, I just shared it with you in our little G-chat we've got. Connor a goner. That's the headline on the back page of the Sun-Times today. Connor a goner, ? So, interesting. I think they can come together for terms in July on a new contract for him, and I think it's going to be like a two-foot putt. I think that's going to happen. I expect it to happen. I mean, here's a kid who's got unbelievable talent. The biggest thing that stands out from this season to me is that he didn't take a big enough jump or a jump that you wanted to see, but the glaring thing is that he was left off of Canada's Four Nations tournament team. Right. And is that about Connor Bedard, or is that just the fact that they just have so much talent they couldn't find a place for him on the roster?
Yeah, I think that was more about the position he plays and kind of there wasn't.
You felt slighted though as a fan of the Blackhawks that your best guy couldn't make his country's tournament team.
But it wasn't like they chose a bunch of younger players over him, right? I think that Bedard needs better players around him, and he needs. There was a really interesting conversation that he had at the after the last game of the year, where he talked about how we're getting really fast. That's going to be our idea. He wants to be a faster skater because he said that he talked about Oliver Moore is supposed to be just one of these guys that can fly on skates, and he said that Frankie Nosar is really fast, and he said even the kid from BU, Greener, that's got to be Hunter Green, right? But I don't know all the nicknames. I know hockey players get a longer name when it's a nickname. Kane goes to Kaner. So I think that's kind of cool that they're going to be fast. And he said that he was talking about how he wants to get faster as a skater because that's going to be their identity moving forward. And I thought, well, that's good if they're just trying to up the speed of the team. But they need more players around him. They need better players on the line with him. You know, all the stuff they did in the offseason, I thought he would be playing with better players, frankly. Mm-hmm. And it didn't seem to work out that way. But, he's caught a lot of criticism because his game isn't as complete as, you know, some people would want it. I don't know enough about hockey to be able to critique him, but he seems like a pretty talented player to me, and he is still the future of the team, and I hope he's not a goner. But I do think that was the worry, that he looked so miserable and everybody was – like, you get tired of losing. You can only do so much of that before you need to show some progress. So it's going to be a big year for everyone.
And it sounds like the locker room was pretty toxic and negative at the end. It was just like a hard place to be.
Yeah. Anytime you're losing, it's a hard place to be. It is. Yeah. It's just, you know, it doesn't bring out the best in anyone. All right, that is the Pick Six. We've got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw. We got Ruthie Polinsky in this morning on Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 in score. Interestingly, if we want to go with adverbs.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Did you like seeing Eric Bieniemy define how the Bears are going to treat new additions at the running back position, be it the 10th overall selection or an undrafted free agent?
If we happen to bring in the guy, we're going to put our arms around him, we're going to coach him up, but he's going to have to understand the same things that I've told these guys that we're going to live by. And there is a standard in which I expect us to perform at, and there is a way in which we will handle and conduct ourselves on a day-to-day basis.
All right, what do you think? Eric Bieniemy defining how the Bears are going to treat anybody in that running back room.
Do I go first? Okay, I'm first. Listen, I got to sit down with Eric Bieniemy yesterday one-on-one for Chicago Sports Network, and I enjoyed this man's company so much. I learned a ton about him. And this is a guy that had a reputation coming into this coaching staff as obviously someone who's interviewed to be a head coach. He was an offensive coordinator. Then he went to college, kind of out of the league. And now he's back in as a position coach. And I'll never forget when he was hired by Ben Johnson, I received a text message from someone in the building in Kansas City who had worked with him and said, he is one of the greatest leaders I've ever been around. And then Andy Reid went on the record at the owners' meetings and said the same thing. And you feel that presence from him. He is a coach. I mean, this is a man that loves to coach. He loves to make players better. And I asked him specifically about the running backs in the draft. And I said, Ashton Gentry has captured this running back class's headline. What is it about him and what is it about the depth in this running back class? And he told me, he was like, I can't even zone in on Ashton Gentry because obviously he's a great player and he's done amazing things. He goes, but there's not really a drop off when you look at maybe those top four or five guys. He's like, there are so many good players in this class. If they do come here, we're going to, you know, he said the same thing to me, you know, we'll welcome them with open arms. But he also went through the entire running back room with me, DeAndre Swift, Roschon Johnson, Travis Homer, and Ian Wheeler, who's coming back from the ACL injury that we all saw happen on Hard Knocks. Right. He's really high on that group. And, you know, obviously he's not going to say what else is he going to say? But he's very high on that group. And I think, you know, when you learn about his coaching style, which is also something that I asked him about, who has this reputation of being, I was like, are you a drill sergeant? Like, why does everyone keep telling us that you're sort of this hard-nosed coach? And he goes, listen, I hold players accountable. I make sure that they're getting better every single day. And he goes, and maybe I'm a little bit louder than the other coaches on the field, too. You know, so he is someone that is going to coach him. He's going to coach him hard and he's going to make sure everyone's better. And again, guys, we talked about this. He's a former player. He's the all-time leading rusher still at Colorado. He is the all-time leading touchdown scorer at Colorado. He is someone who has a lot of stripes. He's a lot of accolades. He's played the game and he's going to coach these guys really hard.
Speaking of Colorado, without looking it up, I can in a moment, but you just made me think of this, Ruthie. There you go, making me think. Is Eric Bieniemy's number retired by the Colorado Buffaloes?
You know what? I was going to ask him how he felt about Shedeur Sanders and Travis. I almost called him Travis Homer. Travis Homer is not having his number retired at Colorado. I almost asked him about it, but I didn't. I couldn't do it. I was like, I sort of ran out of time.
As the all-time leading rusher, now there's a reason to retire one's number. Oh, and I think he was number one, by the way. Anyway, to answer this question specifically, did he or did he not tip his hand like I thought Dennis Allen may have in his answer? Or is this guy like the ultimate poker player, Ruthie, by telling you how deep this class is and he can't even begin to speak about Ashton from Boise State because there are so many good guys in this draft, blah, blah. So it's interesting. Like, is he just saying whoever gets here, I'll coach him up and I'll make him the best running back he can be? Mm-hmm. And if it is a top 10 guy, oh, by the way, you're no better than anybody else in this room because you just got here.
I think that was his message, that whether you're taken at the number 10 pick or if you're an undrafted free agent, you're going to come in here and you're going to live by whatever the standard is. And, you know, the standard is apparently, you know, if you don't block, you don't get the rock. Didn't we hear that from Ben Johnson at one point? I mean, I got to tell you, there's a lot to like about the group that they've put together. And this is one of the more likable guys out there. He he's a tough guy, but that's because that's the way he kind of played. He was also like a really good hard-nosed, undersized running back that ran like a cannonball, for God's sake. So, I really like Eric Bieniemy, and I love the idea that because he came from Kansas City, it's another. They got a very interesting way about doing things there. If we remember from when Matt Nagy was here, they were like play collectors. They had like a huge volume of plays, and they would. Anybody who had an idea about a play, anybody who wrote anything in the back of a clipping or something, Andy Reid wanted the play, and he wanted everybody to contribute, and he wanted as many plays as humanly possible, and then they would pick out which ones they're going to run and how they're going to make it look. But there are a lot of elements, obviously, of the West Coast offense there, but it's really more about play collecting and just having different plays. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how Ben Johnson goes through it with all these guys from so many different places and different cultures. It's a really interesting little experiment, and we'll figure it out. But I think this is the guy that's going to really coach the hell out of some people.
Eric Bieniemy's number is not retired at Colorado, and people are not happy about it.
There are only six numbers retired.
Wow.
Rashawn Salaam's 19 is retired.
Poor Rashawn Salaam. All right. We're going to be right back with your calls. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw. Ruthie Polinsky in this morning on The Score.
Shrink the timeline.
Dustin's favorite quote. There you go. 312-644-6767. Oh, man, I'll tell you, the Bulls were frustrating yesterday just at the end of the season news conference, just because I think it's exactly what we were told earlier that day and what we've known going in, that basically they're gonna have to roll it back because they can't do a lot to fix anything. Let's get to Tony. Tony is in Joliet. Hey, Tony.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Good.
Love your show. Love you guys. Love Dave. And I got to say, you know, I love David, but if he's going to be off, let's get Ruthie every time because she is so knowledgeable and so awesome.
Thanks, Tony.
The point is this, guys. Yeah, I didn't call yesterday because it's just been so frustrating. I wanted to hear about everybody saying how to fix this Bulls team. How about this one, Molly and Ruthie? How about fixing the NBA? Let me just make this point. I grew up heavily in the 90s where I really started to fall in love with basketball and Michael, and every bar was just filled every night. And the last 10 years, I just can't hold on anymore. You know, they don't play defense. They make super huge contracts, but they don't play every night. And a good example, guys, I mean, the Bulls beat that team three times, and then they got smoked in the play-in game. And my point is this. I really started changing my love for basketball, and it changed a couple years ago when I saw a girl called Caitlin Clark. She's special. She is Michael Jordan. She is Larry Bird. And she is literally taking the WNBA. And, guys, I have a prediction, and I believe I'm going to be right on this one. When you guys start to really appreciate the women and watch it, because I know you guys got a lot more you got to watch, you will fall in love with basketball again all over. The way these girls play, they play like basketball in the 90s. They play defense. They play together. The hype on the league, there's such a want. Because the people that grew up that are 50 now, remember it, and there's a want. And when you get that back, and believe me, these girls deliver – it's something special, and the ratings are going to be bigger for the WNBA in the future than the NBA, because I think people are sick of the NBA players.
Okay, thanks, Tony. We appreciate it. We're just running out of time. We'll be right back. We're going to be getting into some Bears talk. That's an interesting one.
Women's sports. We love it.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of The Score.